Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Bears fans, it's time for On the Clock with the Score's own Mark Grody, covering the latest on the upcoming draft for the Bears, featuring experts and analysis on this future-defining draft for Ryan Poles and new head coach Ben Johnson, right here on Chicago's Sports Radio 670 The Score, and always live on the free Odyssey app. Here's Mark Grody.
What's happening, everybody? Hope everybody is doing well. I feel like you are doing well for a number of reasons. Number one, Bears and what's been going on with them, which we'll spend the next hour discussing, and the change in weather today. I just got back from a nice walk in downtown Chicago. Traffic heavy, as you would expect on a Friday, but that kind of made me happy. I was like, people are out, they're excited, it's Friday night, they turn on the radio, and you're darn right, you're going to get a full hour of Bears talk here. On the Clock is the name of this pop-up seasonal program, which I get to perform. I am Mark Grody. It is good to talk to you guys all again. I was on earlier this morning with Paul. Now I get to be on with you guys up until 7 o'clock. Coming up on the program, we will have one really good guest coming on at about 6:20. Mike Golic Jr. will join us, of the Golic family and co-host of the Golic and Gojo podcast. He really knows his college football, though. He is a college football analyst for TNT Sports. So that is the part that we will zoom in on. Of course, I'll ask him about what the Bears have done so far in free agency and what holes exist for the Bears still. But we'll really get down with Mike Golic about some of these players that you're hearing about and maybe you're starting to read about at this point. I mean, I understand, like, it's the order of operations is kind of wild because it's the NFL Combine, which I attended in Indianapolis. And of course, you know, that is a lot about the draft and prospects and college players. So then there's all that hype about the draft, and you had those of us who are covering it are starting to learn about the players in the draft. But then there's this harsh turn into free agency, Bears, where no matter what you have talked about the draft and talking about needs and what the Bears are going to do at 10 and what they should do with some of their second round picks, all of a sudden, that becomes a little bit more clear when you make this really hard turn into free agency, because that really tells the tale. So it's always a little bit awkward when it comes to that, because we're putting the draft before free agency, then free agency comes before the draft, and the draft is in April. So I guess that's a good jumping off point here for the Bears. And they have brought in, catching you up, and if nothing else, it's just good to hear the names again, isn't it? Joe Tooney is here. He is the Bears' left guard this year and hopefully of the future. Drew Dahlman, who is on the Score, from whom you will hear from in just a little bit, he is on the Bears, the brand new center. Jonah Jackson is here. He will be the right guard for the Bears. Dio Odangbo is here. He is the Bears' edge rusher opposite of Montez Sweat. The Bears also started to fill in another need, and that is more depth, more real wide receivers, and they made a third to fourth wide receiver move in bringing in Olamide Zaccheaus, 27 years old, 45 catches, 506 yards, and 3 TDs last year. So again, he slots in as a 3 or maybe even a 4. But so that's what the Bears have done so far in free agent. And there'll be more to come. I doubt anything more splashy than has occurred already. But then we get to play the game now. We get to look and say, well, it's pretty obvious that you're not going to tinker too much with the interior of the offensive line. At this point, it's probably about the depth at least on the interior. Now, I'm not going to be shocked if the Bears were to pile on the inside, and I don't think anybody would be, because it sounds silly to say that's enough offensive linemen. You've got enough offensive linemen. No team would ever say that. Nobody ever has enough depth or really good starters at the offensive line position, so it wouldn't be completely crazy. But you would think that the Bears would look at it if they were going to stay on the offensive line at number 10, which is where the Bears are living right now on the overall in the draft. You would have to obviously look at guys like Will Campbell, who's probably not going to be there at 10. Kelvin Banks, who may be there at 10. Kelvin Banks, tackle out of Texas. Josh Simmons out of Ohio State. And, you know, and one thing you think about, too, is like, are these versatile players that could play on the inside as well and provide that depth? So that is not out of the realm of possibility. I am very curious, and I know Bears fans are, not to maybe the same way they were pre-free agency moves, but I'm really curious to see how Karan Amagaji's career develops, because he was injured last year. That's the best way to put it. He missed training camp. When an offensive lineman misses training camp, that is rough. Any rookie misses training camp, it's rough. But that position in particular. Now, I know in the couple of times that he went out there, it was not good. There is nothing I can say to defend him and say that. But this was a third-round pick. This is a guy that they projected as a potential starter down the road in the NFL. Will he be somebody that at the very least gets the nod for competition at left tackle with Braxton Jones and whomever the Bears might bring in along that offensive line?
I completely forgot about Karan Amagaji. Do you think he's better than some of these left tackles? I know this isn't a super strong left tackle draft this year, but there's still some guys. Like, would you rather see him get a shot, or is Will Campbell a guy you'd rather see them upgrade?
I mean, like I said, I'm still interested in Karan Amagaji. I bought into what I saw of his tape last year before he came to the Bears.
And right.
He had been, or actually after he was drafted. I'm not like acting like somehow I zeroed in on Karan Amagaji.
Big, I did not. What was he at, Yale, right? I know you watch a lot of Yale football, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. You know me, just breaking down that Yale tape. But I was intrigued by that. I'm like, okay, interested in knowing what Ryan Poles and Ian Cunningham and the rest of the front office staff were seeing in him. And I'm still interested. You know, I'm still interested. This is, you know, physically, it's all there for him. He is intelligent, like most offensive linemen are. You know, he's got it all. And I know that, and I had several conversations with him by his locker, and you know, he kept his head up even through the worst of it, even when he was, you know, inactive. And I know that was something of a numbers game at times for Karan Amagaji. But I think, Sean, you're a perfect example of a lot of people. Oh, yeah. So Karan Amagaji. See, this is what happens when you bring in new guys, like a new position like the Bears had, the Bears interior. It makes everything else feel better. I'm sitting here saying, after what was really not a good first year for Karan Amagaji, I'm sitting here saying, oh, maybe he'll compete for starting left tackle.
Yeah, I mean, so, I forgot he existed, man. Like, that's crazy. This week has been nuts. This is an insane week for the Bears.
I know, but that's the good part about this. That now you can tinker with it. You can talk about the depth. You can talk about overloading and drafting a tackle, and that's fun to do. Like I'm always down with the idea of drafting a position where you have strength to make it something that is ridiculously strong, such as. Well, I don't know. I guess it would probably be a little bit naive of me to say that tight end as it stands right now is a position of strength for the Bears. And I only say that because Cole Kmet was not targeted much last year. He was not involved as much as all of us would have wanted to. So I'm not going to sit here and say the tight end's room is strong. But I do think that Cole Kmet is a good tight end, and he's being paid like a good tight end. You brought in Dylan Smythe as well. But you know where I'm going. This is mostly a draft show, and there is a guy by the name of Tyler Warren out of Penn State. And now that you have taken care of needs on the offensive and defensive lines –
now you could start to think about things like, oh, well, now, whereas maybe it didn't make sense last year to take the tight end, maybe at 10, if he's there, if Tyler Warren is there out of Penn State, I don't think it's crazy to consider drafting him.
You were big on Brock Bowers last year. That's interesting.
Well, I will say, and I wasn't going to say it here, Sean, but since you said it and you have led me into it, I did mock draft him last year to the Bear, my first mock draft. And guess what? I got mocked for it.
I remember
it. The season that he had. Remember that? Mm. Yeah.
You look pretty smart
now. Maybe I'm just
making that up. No, no. I saw there because everyone in the world was like, oh, no, Roma Dunze. No, you've got to take it off. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. Well, that's another interesting name, too. The Roma Dunze. I can't wait to see what Ben Johnson does with him. I mean, we know who number one is, and that is number 18 on the Chicago Bears, Caleb Williams. But, yeah, I'd love to see him get Rome to where I think he can be as well. And then there is that word. To me, it's just a word now. Ashton Gentry. Sounds like a great automobile as well. Ashton Gentry, running back, Boise State. Whereas, again, before the draft, it sounded a little bit luxurious at that point, at that place, at number 10 overall. I remain steadfast in my take about Ashton Gentry. I would not draft him at number 10, and I understand how well things have worked out with Jahmyr Gibbs in Detroit on Ben Johnson's watch, but I would not do that. I just there is depth in this draft. Caleb Johnson out of Iowa, Travion Henderson out of Ohio State. There are products. You could probably get a really good running back in the third or even maybe in the fifth round. So, I mean, there is talent throughout. That's one reason for it. Also, look, you still got to keep on the theme of what the Bears have been doing in terms of building this thing on the lines. So, yeah, so I am not crazy about it. But here's what I've been saying. If they did draft him at number 10, I'd make the best of it. I'll tell you right now, I would not be mad and talk show host angry if the Bears did do it. I'd probably be able to make a case for it, and I'd probably be excited. But if I had the yes or no button, I would probably hit no at this point. And then you have, you know, although you've added the two defensive linemen, you still have at the defensive tackle spot. I think Mason Graham, the more I talk to people, and this is didn't really exactly take insider information to come out with this, but more and more, it's probably just a dream. Probably crazy to think that Mason Graham will be available at 10. Walter Nolan out of Mississippi, another good product. And then you have Mason Graham's teammate, Kenneth Grant, out of Michigan, a couple of Wolverines very well thought of. And then, you know, who knows with defensive end and getting the quarterback. I mean, you know, Dio Odangbo, everything that he does as a football player pops out at you except for the sack total. So will they continue to fortify that position? Jack Sawyer out of Ohio State is a guy as well. And we're going to get more into this with Mike Golic Jr. here in just a second. But before we go to the break, I do want to play one piece of audio for you from today because we have it. And Drew Dolman, the Bears' new center, was on the Score with Spiegel and Holmes, and here is what he had to say to all of us.
What made you say yes to the Bears in the first place?
I think the biggest thing I was looking for in this whole process was just really aligning on the qualities that were going to be emphasized by, you know, the organization and the coach and everything. And so I've heard nothing but an emphasis on, you know, playing as prepared as possible, playing as aggressive as possible, and kind of playing to all of our maximum potentials. And so hearing those things really reassured me and made me know that I was headed in the right place.
Yeah, you had said the process made the Bears appealing. Is that what you mean, hearing in the process? Did any of the people in the process make it appealing as well?
I mean, the obvious appeal is, like, you hear stuff about Coach Johnson, who I haven't got to know super well yet, but all my experiences so far have been amazing, and his reputation speaks for himself. And then just learn from them and improve and hopefully contribute as well.
We're learning, as everyone is that doesn't play football, about how important line play is and the intricacies of it. We're very lucky, Drew. Olin Krutz is one of our experts on this show. Like, he jumps on with us every week and he breaks down football with us. When it became apparent that you were a target for the Bears, this is what he said about you and why you're a good fit.
And then they went and got the number one center on the market, Drew Dahlman. Very consistent, good technique, good outside zone football player, has played with young quarterbacks, can get guys lined up, can get the call out, can do the job that he needs to do in the prime of his football career, guys, at 26. Really just coming into his own as a football player. Hopefully he keeps ascending under Coach Roshar. Dahlman is an outside zone guy, so I haven't watched all his film yet. Haven't seen him do a lot of pulling, but I'm sure he can. I'm sure he can pull if he needs to pull. He looks like that kind of athletic center, being a guy who can get on a second level. Down there with the Denver Broncos, Tom Nalen was their center. Reminds me a lot of Drew Dahlman, guys.
So, look, Olin's our guy, and so we pretty much take anything that he says about center play as gospel. So to hear him talk about you that way was really exciting. Was his scouting report spot on?
He's the expert here, so definitely I have a hard time saying, you know, I have anything figured out. So I feel like I always have room to improve. But yeah, definitely I love the outside zone game, and I love some of the other wrinkles that sound like they're coming. So yeah, I think it'll play to my strengths, and hopefully it'll be able to help us win.
That's Drew Dahlman on the score earlier, the Bears' new center. Was he overwhelmed by what Olin Krutz said there? Like, that was an interesting reaction to Olin Krutz's breakdown. I mean, nothing but flattery. And I think he was a little bit verklempt that Olin Krutz, future Hall of Famer, would say such glowing things about Drew Dahlman right there. Or maybe he doesn't want to pull an outside zone. I don't know.
maybe.
But did you find that a little bit hilarious too, Sean?
Yeah, that's why I highlighted it. I thought it was funny. Ah, he was just like, I agree with him. What's he going to say? No, yeah. One's wrong.
Sean, you and I have been working together long enough. You know what moves the meter for me. So, yeah, you pick out the right things. But the best part about this, though, and we talked about this morning on the Molly and Haw show, that these guys are all coming in at once together. I'm trying to think of when's the last time you had three of consequence position players. I'm not just saying on the offensive line necessarily, like impact guys come in and line up in an off season. I mean, like the Flus's first year here was the linebacker draft of TJ Edwards and Tremaine Edmonds. So that was a 1-2 punch right there. Man, I'm trying to think. I don't know if it's unprecedented, but I can't think of a time off the top of my head where there was this flurry of consequential players at one position. That is interesting. I will continue to think about it. And I will love seeing, and this makes me really look forward to the OTAs, which are always right around the corner, just how it begins to look and to see the communication and to see Dan Rauscher, get to know Dan Rauscher. He's the Bears' new offensive line coach. And see, because everyone has different concepts in terms of what they are doing schematically and the shape of the players they want, what size, literally sometimes, what they are going with and what the expectations are and what the type is. So Rauscher will be an interesting guy to get to know and just start to see what this Dahlman connection looks like with Tooney on his left and Jonah Jackson on his right, Darnell Wright at the right tackle spot. And somehow, too, and I was talking about this earlier in terms of one guy coming in to fortify the position and making everything else feel better than maybe it did. That's what those interior guys do for Braxton Jones, to where maybe they'll replace Braxton Jones. But I think it's not something that if Braxton Jones was playing left tackle to begin the season, I don't think that there would be outrage around the city of Chicago. Now, you best have somebody that is ready at like more ready than you've been in the past to potentially step in at left tackle. And that's where guys in the draft, guys like potentially Karan Amagaji or whatever Ryan Poles has up his sleeve in terms of continuing to add the depth to this offensive line. We're going to take our first break here on the clock. And when we return, we'll continue to talk about a lot of the college prospects with Mike Golic Jr. We'll also get Mike's take on what the Bears have already done and how much of a change or how much difference all of this, including Ben Johnson, can potentially make for the Bears. This is On the Clock. I'm Mark Grody on the Score.
You now. An unreal talent. And there he goes. JT into the clear blue. Touchdown.
Let's get back to more Bears draft talk with On the Clock, featuring Mark Grody, right here on Chicago's Sports Radio 670 The Score, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Happy Friday night on The Score. I am Mark Grody. This is indeed On the Clock. We are talking about the Bears until 7 o'clock. That includes free agency, which we are still in the middle of. That includes the draft, which is coming up in April. The Bears select 10th overall in the first round. They've got 2 second rounders, a third, a fifth, a seventh round pick, as well as the way it lines up for the Chicago Bears right now in the draft. And joining us right now to talk more about what the Bears have done and some of those college prospects as well, he is the co-host of the Golic and Gojo show and a college football analyst for TNT Sports. He is none other than Mike Golic Jr. And I can only assume that you are the Gojo of the Golic and Gojo show. Yes.
Yes, that would be correct. We gave Dad first naming rights on Golic since, well, he had first naming rights on Golic, so I think it's only fair.
I think that makes sense. We all want to respect our fathers. I think that he has earned it. Someday, kid, I think that you can probably get that. How's that going, doing that? You've done that for a couple of years now with your dad. How is that going for you guys?
It's been good. You know, we've been fortunate. We got to, during a little bit of the end of our time at ESPN, had the chance to work together and do Golic and Wingo for a couple of years on the same page and really got the taste for it. We had called games together and done stuff, but spending 2 hours every day with my dad's been pretty cool. Having to explain remote broadcasting technology to him every day, less cool. And anyone, you know, of my age that's got parents in their 60s probably can appreciate having to play IT support every morning is something that the coffee is definitely necessary to do.
That's great. I mean, that's a good life for your dad, though. I don't understand this. I don't know. What's going on? Where's my son?
He has openly said he has opted out of learning because in his mind, his wife, my dear sweet mother, and all of his children and my in-laws now, my brother's wife, my sister's husband, all exist to help him offset the technological gap. So when he has a question or something going on, he just hands it off to one of us. It really is a hell of a gambit he's got.
I don't think he's the only one that has done that. I just like that it comes out and straight up admits it. I don't blame him. I think we're all going to get to a point where it's like, that's enough. I'm sure it's great. I'm sure it's the easiest way to do everything in life. But I know one way, and that's the way I want to keep it going. Mike Golic Jr. joining us here on the Clock, on the Score. I'm Mark Grody. And I do want to talk about you some of the big-time college prospects, which you've watched and done games for, Mike. But what do you think about what the Bears have done so far in free agency with Tooney and Dahlman and Jonah Jackson and Odangbo, and just all the moves that they have made so far to fortify offense and defensive lines?
Yeah, it delivered on a promise, right? Ben Johnson came in and said, hey, I think we can flip these position groups, specifically offensive line, in one offseason. And they went out there and attacked it. And I think when you've got the cap space they have and a defined need at that position, these are the kind of big swings that you have to make. Are there some that could qualify as an overpay or maybe a little bit rich for other people's blood? Sure, but if you're Chicago, you don't have time to wait around and to make the situation better over time for your second-year quarterback. Ben Johnson was brought in here to put the defibrillators on Caleb Williams' chest, and go ahead and shock this back to life. And I think we saw last year the deficiencies up front, obviously, with a glaring and overwhelming area of need. And so I think, you know, Drew Dahlman coming in, a solid player in the middle there, but surrounded by two guys, one in Joe Tooney, who is the consummate pro, the ultimate technician, a guy who showed off the versatility and that team-first attitude last year, kicking out the left tackle for the Chiefs. And then Jonah Jackson, listen, I think – there's no substitute for having a guy that understands the way that you do business. And for Jonah, yeah, injury marred so much of last year. Some of the position change stuff, I think, skewed overall what I think is still a really strong player and one who speaks the language of what Ben wants to do and the tone they want to set on that offense. And so I think having him there as a resource for Caleb Williams at the line of scrimmage, in the meeting rooms, as they're installing all this, is going to be invaluable in addition to what he affords him as a protector up front. So you combine that with adding some beef on defense, and we see that's a formula that the best team in the NFL right now in the Philadelphia Eagles has used to the tune of a Super Bowl and a couple of Super Bowl appearances in a three-year span.
Yeah, I didn't even mention Grady Jarrett, who is just going to bring life to the Bears defense and solve that three technique spot. I wanted to follow up with you, though, Mike, on, you know, talking about Caleb Williams, and you put it perfectly, shocking him back to life with Ben Johnson, because we know that there is greatness in Caleb Williams, because we have all seen greatness in Caleb Williams. That's why he is who he is. Do you think that the offensive line was the biggest problem for Caleb Williams last year?
Yeah, I think it always starts there, especially with young quarterbacks, when the timer in your head starts going off differently and all of a sudden, you know, to quote the Sam Darnold parlance of our times, when you start seeing ghosts, that's where the trouble starts. And you just saw it led to a lot of frustration, right? Caleb Williams is an incredibly talented player, but even he was getting hit so much last year. You saw him wearing the frustration of that on the sideline, and eventually it gets to be too much for anybody. And then, you know, it speeds up the clock. He already had a natural proclivity to try and hold onto the ball and make plays, the stuff that we saw in college at USC. So I do think it all starts up front. And I think I'll be interested to kind of see the mesh of that offense. You know, watching Ben Johnson over the last few years, the comfort level he had with a guy in Jared Goff, who is a statue. Jared Goff had no choice but to play within the confines of the offense in Detroit. Yeah. Because we saw when things broke down, he's like a late-stage Manning, where he's just going to fall to the ground and he's going to live to fight another day. Caleb Williams has way more playmaker in him than Ben Johnson's called recently. And so how they still build spots into that offense for Caleb to go out and do the things that made him the number one overall pick while then forcing him to stay on schedule and get some better habits along the way is going to be a really, really interesting subplot.
Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt. You know, what is Ben Johnson's part in all of this? Who else can he make better beyond Caleb Williams? All of that we will find out in short order for the Bears. All right, I have to ask you, since our producer Sean Sears insisted upon playing the Ashton Gentry highlights coming in to this section, it's hilarious, Mike, because I think everybody reasonably in their heads, especially before the Bears signed offensive linemen, knew maybe 10 is a little bit gluttonous to take a running back as good as he might be. But I'm going to ask you the question now, with these offensive linemen and the additions on defense, even adding that wide receiver, they are filling needs. Could the Bears afford to draft a running back and Ashton Gentry at number 10 overall?
I think they could. Now, I do want to caution, like, the offensive line's coming together. The Jonah Jackson injury concerns are real. Joe Tooney's older. Drew Dahlman's not a world beater. All these caveats to say, I do think those upgrades combined with Ben Johnson's play calling are going to make this hospitable ground for a running back. And Ashton Gentry is that perfect blend of running back where I've been on the record of saying, hey, the lesson from last season about the running back market isn't, hey, let's just pay him and draft them all really high now. It's, you have to be honest with yourself about, do you have an environment that can give these guys a chance to thrive? I think Ashton Gentry can kind of meet you where you are right now, though, if you're Chicago, where, hey, we know Ben Johnson's offense can feature all the skills of a running back incredibly well and make use of those. Check that box. But Ashton Gentry is also a tackle-breaking machine and a guy that helps his offensive line the way he did at Boise the last couple of years. And so I do think while there might be some growing pains as you get the continuity with that group under control early in the season, having a running back who himself is going to erase a couple of defenders, is going to make a couple of guys miss and help you out, it certainly has value as a playmaker. You know, I think in the right circumstances, you throw the positional running back of value of running back out a little bit and say, we have a playmaker, and by drafting him in the first round, we also have an extra year of control during the prime years for a running back in their early and mid-20s. And so all those things combined with just the stellar tape from one of the best running back prospects we've seen in a while, it makes 10, I think, a place that you can reasonably start to think about Ashton Jeanty and not feel bad about it.
It's really cool when a team has a running back of consequence. I mean, and you're right, this is not going to go back to the way it was in the 80s and 90s, where it was running backs were thought of on the same level as quarterbacks, which is crazy to think about how far those two positions have separated. But speaking of separation, let me ask you this. You have Ashton Jeanty, who is, you know, the number one potential prospect in the NFL. What is the difference? Like, how much better is he than the rest of the pack? Say like a Caleb Johnson from Iowa. I don't know how much you got to see him, or Travion Henderson out of Ohio State. What is the difference in terms of those guys relative to Jeanty?
Yeah, well, I think Omarion Hampton's really the one that seems to get lumped into that potential first round grade. And Caleb Johnson, okay, and Omarion Hampton, I'll say with those two too, though, the size on the running back class this year, like Ashton Jeanty's got muscles on top of muscles. Omarion Hampton and Caleb Johnson, Omarion Hampton, my comp for him was Metal Mario, if you've ever played any of the Mario suite of games. Like,
I have not.
He is so big, strong, sturdy, fast, like, it's unbelievable. It felt like shaking hands with two guys that were made out of lead when I met those two running backs at the combine. And so I just think the thing with Ashton is the center of gravity and the tackle breaking. He's so sturdy in the lower body. It's the one thing that I do think him and Omarion Hampton have in common is both of them shrug off tacklers who hit them at or below the waist with relative ease because they're so balanced and centered. Hampton and Caleb are a little bit taller than Ashton, but even at the size, like, you know, 5'9", 5'10", he's a really good, stocky 210, 215, and combine that with the vision, the open field speed that I don't think gets the credit he fully deserves on that. And you saw pop up, especially against high-level competition early in the season for Boise State. I just think he's the total package there. Maybe not, you know, the full route tree kind of receiver the way that Christian McCaffrey is and that we lionize, mm-hmm, but a guy who could still be really effective out of the backfield that can be a three-down back for you early in his career.
The tight end position is another one that I was just talking about here on the show, and that, again, the Bears could, at number 10, be, I mean, that you have Cole Kmet in the tight end room. He's leading it there. You have Dylan Smythe in the tight end room right now, but Tyler Warren, Mike, tell me about him and what you've seen out of the Penn State tight end and anybody else that you would put as honorable mention in that room. And is 10 too high to take this tight end?
As someone who was personally victimized in, I believe that was the Sugar Bowl by Tyler Warren when Notre Dame played Penn State. Oh, no, scratch that. That might have been the Orange Bowl. Either way, Notre Dame played Penn State in the college football playoff this year, and I saw firsthand against a really good Notre Dame secondary what that little Gronkery-incarnate tight end in Tyler Warren was able to do. And I really think, while that comparison's unfair, and so many comps, yeah, like that are unfair to players, but it just the strength, both as a blocker where he can be devastating in the run game, after he's got the ball in his hands, the way tacklers just bounce off him in the open field, the versatility that we saw on display for Penn State. He would be a phenomenal tight end in anyone's offense, but man, handing him to Ben Johnson, knowing what Ben does with multiple tight end formations, how he's been able to use that position with, you know, TJ Hawkinson or Brock Wright or the guys that they had over the years in Detroit. I just think, man, the things that you could do with him in that offense are really, yeah, really exciting. Because he's, unlike Colston Loveland, the other tight end out of Michigan, who's, yeah, probably going to be a first rounder, more of a pure pass catcher, more of a guy, I'm blanking on his name right now, Dalton Kincaid, that they drafted in Buffalo, where he's, yeah, like an 11.5 personnel tight end. He's a big guy. He's a big mismatch, but not necessarily going to stick his nose in there in the pile, be someone you want attached to the line of scrimmage. Tyler Warren can do all of that for you. He can be the inline guy. You can move him around. And I think that kind of versatility is exactly what Ben Johnson loves at the core of this offense.
Oh, man, you got me excited about that because, yeah, we're all, you know, there is to some degree, we are all expecting magic out of Ben Johnson in terms of what, because we've seen what he can do with tight ends and how creatively he uses them. So that's some good thinking there. Couple other things for you here. Mike Golic Jr., we appreciate him joining us, the co-host of the Golic and Gojo show. He is a college football analyst for TNT Sports as well. Mason Graham out of Michigan. I don't think that he's going to be there at 10 where the Bears draft in the first round, but what do you think about him in terms of the impact he might have in the NFL?
I would agree. It seems like this guy's really trending to like a top five, top eight pick in the draft. And understandably so. It's hard to turn on the tape and find a time where someone's blocked him consistently. And I understand showed up and maybe weighed a little less in the combine than people thought. The measurables may not have been as overwhelming, but he's one of those guys like, we don't need to make this complicated. Like, hey, the measurables might not be perfect. Don't be weird about it. This is like when Kyle Hamilton ran kind of a slow 40 coming out of Notre Dame. Let's not be dumb. This guy is a tackle, you know, a block shedding machine. He's so disruptive and gets up the field. He can hold up well enough at the point of attack, despite maybe not being as heavy as, you know, someone like Kenneth Graham, who was next to him at Michigan, or Kenneth Walker, excuse me. But either way, I just think he's so disruptive is the word that keeps coming to mind every time I watch him. Guys can't stay in front of him, and that's the name of the game. And so if you want to pick him, if he somehow falls to 10, you would absolutely be sprinting to the table to get a guy like that as a part of that defensive front in Chicago. But I'm with you. I don't think he's going to be there.
Yeah, I like that you said, too. Let's stop with the silliness. Like, if there's a real problem in the 40 or the vertical or the bench press or whatever they're putting these guys through, then we'll talk. Then I understand if he's huffing and puffing and it's a real issue. Other than that, how did you put it? Stop being silly. I mean, I agree with that.
If it's something that all of a sudden, hey, you see a guy run a slow 40 and you go back and watch the tape and go, oh, you know what? Come to think of it, burst in the open field was an issue for a wide receiver. But, like, I don't look back at the tape of Mason Graham, who was a dominant force en route to the Michigan national title two seasons ago and still a great player on a defense and a team that struggled in general this year relative to that standard. Like, I never saw him getting bullied. I never saw him getting pushed around. Like, he was dictating the terms to the other people against some of the best competition of the sport on the team that was the best team in college football 2 years ago. Like, again, don't overthink it. None of that stuff that people are worried about showed up on tape.
Just send that. That's such a great point. Doing what he did against what is going to also be NFL talent is a pretty good predictor that that's going to be a good product in the National Football League. Last position I'll ask you about, and I don't expect you to have, because it's always, I think, very difficult to give a full scouting report on some of these offensive tackles, but it's not out of the realm of possibility that a Kelvin Banks out of Texas could be available for the Bears. I doubt Will Campbell would be there, but who are some of the guys that stand out to you if it's not those two guys right there?
Yeah, I think the one that's gaining a lot of steam, and you know, I wonder if he'd be here at 10 at the rate he's climbing boards, is Armon Membaugh out of Missouri, who is a guy that some people have speculated maybe could have had guard in his future, but then went and tested through the roof at the combine. And you see on tape the athleticism, big square body, big ass, low center of gravity, all the stuff that you want out of a guy, and clearly athletic enough to play tackle. Someone put in my head the comp of Ike Ekwonu out of NC State, who's been the offensive tackle at Carolina, in terms of the smooth athleticism on the perimeter that you see. So I think he's going to be a guy in the mix for that as well. But I've been amazed at sort of the fall of Kelvin Banks down draft boards as we've gotten closer and closer to April. That was a guy that going into this last season was probably right neck and neck in the conversation with OT1 with Will Campbell, and a guy that I just think of the top end guys in this draft, you know, Gray Zabel out of North Dakota State is going to be another one that probably kicks into guard. But for Kelvin Banks, was taller than people expected at the combine. I think a full 6'5", has all the measurables there. Really bright young man, the way he talks about his game, the way he talks about his deficiencies in his game, all reeks of the maturity of someone who's been well coached at Texas. And then I just think the power he generates in the run game and the natural bend he has, he's the freakiest O-line athlete in this class to me, just in terms of the way that his body contorts on the field when he's blocking defenders at the point of attack, when he's digging guys out in the run game. Occasionally, he does some things footwork-wise that aren't the cleanest. Sometimes his upper body can get a little bit out of whack. But I think in terms of a guy who already is coached pretty well and has ability that creates a lot of upside, he's a really interesting prospect to me and a guy that I liked on tape and liked even more in person when I had a chance to chat with him.
Mike, really good stuff. You've given me some things to think about for sure as it pertains to the Bears and the rest of the draft this year. And I would keep you longer, but I just got a text from your dad, Mike Golic, saying that he forgot his password on internet and he needs his Apple ID. So I want to make sure you have time to take care of your show partner.
Hey, listen, it is built into my contract at this point, so the job never ends. I'm going to go take care of that. Thank you for having me in the meantime and giving me a nice distraction from my job and personal Mike Golic Senior IT.
Bye, Mike. Talk to you later.
Have a good one.
That was, Mike Golic Jr. He does a show with his dad, the great Mike Golic. And Mike Golic Jr., college football analyst for TNT Sports. I hope you enjoyed that. The Tyler Warren stuff, that is interesting to me. Just hearing a guy who has seen him and done some games for him to, like, that's a game, potentially game-changing tight end relative to this NFL. We have to take a break here on the clock. We will wrap up the program after this on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Bears? Tommy, do you pay attention to what's going on with your Chiefs? Because they lost Joe Tooney to the Bears.
Joe Tooney's right here.
I don't know if you realize that or not. Not to ruin your trip or anything or put a damper on the fun you're having, but Joe Tooney is a Bear.
Hey, he's going to be a great Bear. You know, I mean, we're obviously going to miss him, you know, in that line. And anybody that protects Patrick Mahomes is a valuable investment.
Let's get back to more Bears Draft Talk with On the Clock, featuring Mark Grody, right here on Chicago's Sports Radio 670 The Score, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
That was Cubs pitching coach Tommy Hotovy, who was a guest on the Mully and Haw show today, and I was filling in for Mully, who will return on Monday, but I had a blast working with David Haw. The last couple of days, we got that Bears question. And I've told the story a couple of times, but in the year that they drafted Patrick Mahomes, Tommy Hotovy, big, huge Chiefs fan, massive. He loves the Chiefs like you love your favorite Chicago sports team, like totally into it. And in they drafted him for the 2017 was his first year in the NFL, same as Mitch Trubisky. And I remember I was doing Cubs pre and post then. We were at the team hotel. I wasn't hanging out with him, but we both just happened to be in the gym at the same time doing our respective aerobic activities. And the draft was on and we were both watching. And that there it was when Patrick Mahomes was drafted. And, you know, Mahomes was at the time, he was definitely a well-known commodity, but one who people didn't think was as obvious as some of the other guys. And I remember Tommy Hotovy saying to me, he's like, oh, look out, man. He's like, this guy, man, he's the real deal. And look, I had to take into account that he's a super fan, meatball fan. So he's going to support whomever they draft. But there was a sincerity with the way Tommy talked about it. And I've never forgotten that, and he was right. Not that it was a stretch to predict that a first-round quarterback could be great in the NFL, but not to the extent that Patrick Mahomes has done and where he was existing. As we officially welcome you back to On the Clock, hope you guys are having a great start to your weekend. God, is it nice outside. I'm gonna get outside in a little bit. I'm gonna go see an REM cover band tonight. Oh, jealous? Oh, yeah. Let me play a little bit more audio here because one of the guests that we also had on the Molly and Haw show today was Brian Baldinger. He has a breakdown, and he breaks down games. His expertise, because he played the position, is offensive line, and it's very interesting to hear where Brian Baldinger thinks the Bears' offensive line might rank or where they should associate the Bears with the additions of Tooney, Dahlman, and Jonah Jackson.
On paper, they could be a top 10. I mean, I really like the offensive line coach, Dan Rauscher. He was masterful with Sean Payton in New Orleans over a period of time. Like, he's a really good architect. So, you know, these things generally, they can take time, you know, all coming together and nonverbal communication and five guys, you know, working with one brain, all that kind of stuff that you hear about. Sometimes that takes time, but generally it starts with the center. I said all year last year that you're only going to be as strong as your center. Drew's a pretty good center, good run blocker. He kind of starts there and kind of it sort of filters out. But I always think it starts with the center. And I think they got, you know, a good young center. Missed a couple games last year, but for the most part, they've been a pretty good running team in Atlanta. I think that's where it's going to start.
It's just an opinion, but man, that sounds good to me. Top 10 offensive line. It's got a nice sound to it, Bears fans. One more from Brian Baldinger. And that's specifically on Jonah Jackson, who had the weird year for the Rams last year. Signed a $51 million deal at about this time last year. They throw him in at center where he had never played. He then ruptures his scapula a few games into the season. And then just did come back injured reserve, but did return, I think, in middle of November. Just never didn't have a good season, but whether it was play-wise or injury-wise. So they're hoping on some Jackson returning to normal, so to speak. But here's Brian Baldinger on all that as the background.
You know, he's in Detroit. He was in there, you know, with Ben. So I think he knows the system. I think look, he was not good at center. I mean, but he got hurt in preseason, so I don't know how bad the shoulder was. The rookie, Bo Limmer, beat him out cleanly, and their line took off. They had a ton of injuries in preseason. It took him half the year to kind of get things right. But, guys get injured. It's a 100% injury rate in this sport. His shoulder should be fine. If his shoulder's fine, he should be fine. So I don't think it's going to be a knock against him, but I think he knows the system. He knows what they did with Ben Johnson in Detroit. It should be, he should pick up where he left off 2 years ago.
Odyssey Insider, Brian Baldinger talking about the offensive line and specifically Jonah Jackson right there as we wind down this edition of On the Clock. We thank Brian Baldinger and his breakdown. We thank Mike Golic Jr. for coming on the show and giving us lots to think about. If you want to check out that interview, it was really good because of what Mike Golic Jr. was saying. If you want to check that out on the Odyssey app, please do. It will be there forever, but it's fresh right now. It's now. So check it out. Thanks to Mike Golic Jr. Thank you to Sean Sears for producing the show and doing a great job at that. And thank you for all of you for listening to On the Clock. I appreciate you, and I will talk to you soon right here on The Score.
So much for that.